High FM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Either way, let's talk about harmful forever chemicals. I'd never heard of such a thing. Never heard. You know, and I suffer from a lot of anxiety. I worry about everything. I now have something new to worry about. What is a forever chemical? Dr. Gerard Verduin, he's a toxicologist from the Griffin Poison Information Center. A very good morning. Thanks for joining us. Are you going to bring me more anxiety this morning? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, at this stage in our world, there's hardly ever anything positive to talk about because we've got wars, we've got chemicals not supposed to be environment, we've got strife and economic meltdown. So
we might as well worry.
Unfortunately about the PFAS, I can't give you good news this morning.
Okay, so what is, because I had no idea about PFAS. What are they?
Polyfluorinated alkane substances. I'm going to go back to the basics of chemistry to explain to people where they come from.
Right.
Everybody knows lighter fuel, which is butane, and we all know petrol, which is isooctane.
Mm-hmm.
So those are basically alkane molecules, so they're hydrocarbons. So if you take that hydrocarbon molecule and you put that into a reaction vessel under pressure with fluorine or hydrofluoric acid, and you give it a lot of UV radiation, ultraviolet radiation, mm-hmm. under high pressure and high temperature, then there's an interaction between the fluorine and the molecule, and the fluorine then binds the carbon atoms in the molecule. So that's where the molecules come from, these polyfluorinated alkenes or the perfluorinated alkanes.
Right.
And the reason why they're so persistent and so tough is because the bond between carbon and fluorine is exceptionally strong. So the carbon-carbon bond is still the strongest bond between any two atoms in the world, and the second one is then the fluorine-carbon bond, which is even stronger than the fluorine or a carbon-hydrogen bond.
Right.
And to break those apart is technically impossible unless you really burn them up at very high temperatures. And we've been developing these things, but I say we, I'm an organic chemist, so I'm also on the wrong side of the fence this morning, but organic chemists have developed these molecules over years as very beneficial to society. If you think about simple Teflon, Teflon is one of those that we develop. There's not a single household in the country without a pan with a Teflon coating.
So we're using them in every aspect.
In the home.
In many aspects
in the home,
of our lives.
Yeah, in certain types of clothing, for example, if the plumbers all use that white Teflon tape when you do sealing up of joints and stuff. So they are really good and grand chemicals. But unfortunately, like most things that we as people produce, like fuels and plastics like these, they do have the long-term possibility of building up an environment. And because of the fact that these molecules are so extremely tough, the environment doesn't have a mechanism to break down. And normally, even, you remember the old DDT, even DDT can be broken down over time because of UV radiation, because of heat, because of caustic environments, or because of microbial action. It might take 100 years to break it down completely, but in the case of the carbon-fluorine bond, it's a very strong bond. Now, I'll just explain to you, there are two different classes. There's the perfluor alkanes, and there's the polyfluorinated alkanes. The perchlor ones is where you take the molecule and you replace every carbon atom with all the hydrogen atoms on the carbon chain with fluorine. Now, that molecule is so tough, even with a nuclear bomb, you would have to have a massive explosion to break them apart. Whereas the polyfluorinated ones, not every hydrogen atom is replaced. So there's two spots on the chain.
So is this something that just seemed like a good idea at the time when we were making these things?
Obviously, when Teflon was discovered, it was one of those wonder chemicals. But I take people back to when DDT was discovered in 1897 and eventually deployed in the First World War as an anti-malarial drug. It was a wonder chemical, just like cocaine in the old days in the USA. It was a wonder chemical. Look at the consequences of what we did to the wonder chemical. So
right.
I think at the time when the world was less environmentally conscious, the scientific world didn't think about the long-term effects of what we were designing, what we were making.
Yeah.
Just like thalidomide, which was a very good analgesic in the old days, but it had a devastating effect on the development of fetuses. So
we're saying that the smartest people are not necessarily that smart.
We are smart, intellectually. I, that's for my own species, but I always tell my students when I teach them, a scientist must have consequential thinking. In other words, if you design a molecule and you build a molecule, think about the long-term consequences. And because of...
And the unintended consequences, which I think which is the big thing.
But I think very often the marketing and the economic incentives drive the science harder than what the science drives the science. That's our problem. And there was not maybe the long-term thinking of what can happen to a molecule that you can virtually break apart with normal water action or mechanical action or with UV radiation. So that's why we sit with these chemicals in the environment now, and it's going to take eons to get rid of them.
Right. So what now? One of our listeners asking. What? Where to from here then?
Well, if I think about what our Department of Environmental Affairs are doing, and I must really applaud them this morning loudly compared to any other state department, they are making plans to bring or to force society to use alternatives or to phase them out or to terminate them at a certain stage, just like they're doing with the mercury bulbs. But that's not the same sentiment we find across the world, because many industries don't want to get rid of them because they are money spinners for them. But we need to look at things that have a long-term devastating impact on the environment, just like the microplastic you find in many of the cosmetics and many of the soaps.
Mm.
So they simply have to go. They have to go. Not a case that we need them. They have to go. Just like the old POPs chemicals like Dildrin, and DDT, they have to go. There's no doubt about the fact. It's not a case, but if or maybe, they have to go. Just like I would say, like I said last night on the show, nuclear weapons have to go.
Right.
It's not negotiable. That's it.
Yeah. Is there any uptake on that? I mean, is there any progress from the in order to move to get them removed?
Well, in the international arena, you know, we've got conventions like the Rotterdam Convention and the POPs Convention talking about the particular pollutants. And I haven't read the international conventions as yet, but there will certainly be a convention that will start tackling these very, very long-term organic pollutants. And I think the perfluoroethanes and so on, or alkanes, will also come under the loop of the POPs Convention. And I think people will start now rapidly listing them and giving end of time dates. So we talk about a phase out of manufacturing, we talk about a phase out of use, and we talk about a phase out of the molecules completely. So there will be an action globally taken by this. And these conventions are pretty useful and they're pretty active.
Right.
So they are multinational. We are, as country, we are signatories to all of them. So we will follow the suit, but I think we might be a bit ahead of the rest of the world, because our Department of Environmental Affairs, I think, is more forward-thinking and more progressive with these types of things than many other nations.
Dr. Gerard Verdun, toxicologist from the Griffin Poison Information Center, talking to us about polyfluorinated alkyl substances. And I tell you, I was schooled. I had absolutely no idea.